Thank you, Ron. Our next speaker is Moji from Rock Creek.
Thank you. My name is Moji. It's a tough lead to follow. Great job, thanks. Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. Narcotics Anonymous saved my life on a daily basis. And I'm grateful to Narcotics Anonymous from the bottom of my heart. Everybody who knows me should be grateful to Narcotics Anonymous from the bottom of their heart. My employer should be grateful to Narcotics Anonymous from the bottom of their heart. My neighbors should be. Neighborhood grocery stores, the banks. Everybody who ever comes in contact with me should be grateful to Narcotics Anonymous. I was born into a family, just like Leave It to Beaver kind of family. I was the first child. I was the first grandchild to both families. My father was a military officer. My mom was a. Then she became a school teacher. I had everything I wanted. I had everything I didn't even ask for. You know, first child, they give you everything. They give you things they didn't have themselves. That was a trophy. Everything was perfect. And then my brother came around a couple of years later, and then the two of us became a team. I mean, we were everything both families ever wanted from both sides. They would just put us up there and just praise us. And they bought us things. They took us around. They did things for us. My uncles and aunts used to take turns to take us out there and just show us off to other friends and their other family members and everything else. We were just like Leave It to Beaver kind of family. Everything went well till at the age of, like I would say, about 15, I started using drugs. Things remained well. Till at the age of 16 and a half, my mother found the first bag of heroin in my possession. Instantly, things went wrong. From a Leave It to Beaver family, we became like Adam's family. Fingers went up. It was all your fault, your fault, your fault, your fault, your fault, your fault, your fault. If you had stayed home, he would have been a normal child. If we hadn't moved around like we did, he would have been a good child like everybody else. And all this shit started happening. And I didn't know at that time. I found out later on after I got clean that this disease is actually contagious. And it affected the entire family of mine. In the meantime, as I saw all this shit happening, I started taking the blame to myself. Like, I am the cause of all this for years and years. My dad got depressed and at times violent. I mean, it's really hard to deal with a drug addict child. I don't know if I should say that I'm fortunate that I don't have a child because I would have to deal maybe with somebody just like myself. And on the other hand, my mom became one of those typical mothers who start, you know, hiding things, you know, putting things under the carpet so nobody else would see, you know, giving me money to go out there and cop so when people were coming to visit so I wouldn't have a, you know, runny nose, so I would act normal. A typical drug addict's mother. My brother became more addicted to sports. He wasn't an addict. He did basketball as a fucking, like, can I say fucking discrimination? Yep. Thank you. he was doing basketballs like 1,400 hours a day. And he was doing basketball, swimming, water polo, you name it, volleyball, all in the same time. But he was not an addict. My life went on for years and years and years using and fighting it and hiding it and going through any ways and means to get more. And I found myself in the back of my parents, in the back seat of their car many times on the way to doctors and treatment centers and methadone clinics and psychiatrists and psychologists and sometimes even clergy to be preyed on and all this stuff. And looking back, I would say each and every time I was willing to quit this. I was. You know, I don't know any real drug addict that goes through what we go through. You know, steal money, do everything in the book to get the $20 that we need and then put it in our bodies just to be able to be functioning normally and enjoying it. I enjoyed it after I put it in my body because I needed it. You know, the party was over a long time. I mean, a little short after I started it. To me, party is when a bunch of people get together, having a great time, go home, and wake up the next morning, call each other and say, had a great time. Thank you. Remember, we had a great time. That's party. And I did it for about maybe 6 months, using drugs. After that, my life, the most comfortable place in the world was in the bathroom, with blood all over the mirror, sometimes even with a beat bag, cussing and screaming at the guy who sold it to me, and hating life. So I was willing every time I was presented with a chance to get clean. Each and every time, I was willing. I was willing to give it a chance, give it a try. I was hoping that this guy will have the miracle cure for this problem of mine, and we're actually going to get what we pay for this time. And I participated, and I did things what I was supposed to do, but, you know, going through cold turkey and jonesing and shit, you know, I was just like, no, let me put it back a little bit in my vein, and I'll start tomorrow all over again. I didn't know I had a disease. Towards the end, I was convinced that I have a condition that for which there is no cure. I was convinced. I used to talk to people that had been drug addicts for years and years. Some of them had this elephant hands. And they've been using drugs since, you know, twice as long as my age. And I used to look up to them. I used to listen to them. They would say directly to my face that, kid, you started it. The only way to stop it is to die. They've been doing it for years. They knew. And I was convinced that I was going to die an addict. In the meantime, I will do whatever is required of me to do in order to get people off my back. And there were a lot of fingers to my face. A lot of them. Started from my mom, my dad, and then the school authorities and principals, and later on the cops and the judges and the probation officers and the parole officers and the bosses. They all were like, I had fingers in my face all my life for being a drug addict. And there were consequences for my using drugs all my life. You either stop using drugs or. There was always an or. After you have to stop using drugs. Or there's a punishment. I've been getting punished for my disease all my life. And I didn't know I had a disease. I had a condition and I was getting punished for it. And I well thought that I well deserved it because see what I create. So I'm going to do this time, So I'm going to get fired. So I'm going to get kicked out. So I'm going to get beat up. So I'm going to get ignored and called names and all the other things because I deserve it, because I'm a drug addict, because I'm not, I don't have the ability to stop. But the interesting thing is that everybody who had their fingers in my face, none of these people had ever used drugs. The school principal, the judges, the probation officers, the correctional officers, the police and all that, they never used drugs, so they didn't know how it feels to be a drug addict and not being able to stop. But yet they were punishing me for using drugs. So I thought I was doomed, like every other drug addict that I ever knew. So I always shared this feeling with my brothers and sisters drug addicts that, you know, we're getting punished. By lacking a better word, by a miracle, I ended up in my first NA meeting a long time ago in 1985 in Washington, D.C. after an overdose. I had been using drugs, I've been on the street, I've been disowned by my family, I hadn't called home for months and months and months, and I probably was in my same clothes for months, I didn't even know. So I ended up in Alexandria Hospital in Alexandria, Virginia, and back then they put drug addicts in the psych ward. We didn't have many detoxes. So I was in the room all by myself, there were glasses all over it, and I saw people getting in small little groups and having the small little therapy things. But they wouldn't ask me out to go with them. And every time a nurse or anybody else, people who brought food and everything else, came to my room or came to get my vitals or bring me food and, you know, check me out, they had these masks on and they had these gloves on and everything else, and they handled me with all this stuff. That was 1984. That was pre-HIV and AIDS. I thought I had this contagious disease, that these people really don't want to catch it. So it was the first day, towards the end of the day, I asked the nurse, I said, go ahead and hit me with it. What's going on? She said, what's going on with what? I said, what is it that all this masks and all this gloves and all this things, separation and quarantining me and all the other things, what's that all about? She said, oh, you stink. I instantly started crying, started sobbing, because I couldn't remember the last time I had taken a shower or I'd bathed. I couldn't. And I didn't know how badly I stunk. And I realized how low my life had taken me to the level of an animal. So I took a shower. Thank God. I actually walked in the shower with my clothes on, and they gave me the gowns and, you know, and scrubs and everything else, and I washed my clothes. As I was getting released, this doctor gave me a list of meetings. He said, kid, go to these meetings. These are the meetings for people like you. And so I left, and I went and shot dope, and I used drugs for a few days, and 3-4 days later, I was so desperate, and it was so cold, and I had nowhere to go, and I was on the street, and my girlfriend was locked up. So I realized I had this little list in my back pocket. I pulled it out, and I was about 4 or 5 blocks from this meeting. I walked into this meeting. I didn't even know what N and A stood for. And people, like the gentleman was talking about, they were so happy to see me. They're all happy. They're all clean. They're all talking all kinds of good stuff. They had cars out there. They were disgusting. And I sat there, and I did not hear a word what they were talking about. But I was so desperate, and I was willing to do anything it what it takes again to get clean. Sometime during a meeting, they said something, and some people raised their hands. I raised my hand as well. I didn't want to be left out. I'm willing to participate. And later on, I found out they were saying, whoever has more than a year clean, please raise your hand. I done it. Plus, my English sucked really badly. I couldn't understand more than half the things that we were talking about in the meeting. They gave me, on the second or third meeting I was in, they gave me the traditions to read. That was only the first page back then. And it took me about 40 minutes to read it. And nobody took it away from me. And they sat there and let me go through it. And when I finished it, I was like, I just came out of a swimming pool. I was soaking wet. But I did it. The unity back then was in full force. People got united all together. Some of these people didn't even like each other. Some of these people were not even friends. Some of these people were like even... they hated each other, some of them. Everybody got united to save this newcomer. They were speaking my language. They wouldn't ask me hard questions. Like, are you willing to work the steps? Did you call your sponsor? Are you going to come to convention with us next year? None of that. The questions were, are you on paper? Are you on probation? Where are your family? Do you call them? Want a cigarette? You hungry? We're going out to eat. Want a hamburger? I like those things. People were really, really uniting to save a newcomer. Anyway, at the end of that meeting, I was coming down the elevator. I asked these people, I said, does this program offer any kind of help? You know, like assistance? I was trying to, you know, hustle these people out of some money or something. The guy said, like, what? I said, I don't know, just like a food stamp or any kind of cash, place to stay maybe. And they looked at each other. One of them said, yes, yes, we do. We offer all those things. I said, yeah, what do I have to do? He said, nothing, just come with me. Do you have anywhere to go? I said, no, I'm on the street. So he took me home that night. He had a beautiful apartment. He was so happy. On the way home, he blasted his music. And we go to his house. He's got beautiful furniture, artistic things around his house. He told me he'd sleep on the couch. And he said, I'll see you tomorrow. I sat on that couch. I told myself, I wonder what he wants. Nobody has ever done anything like that for free for me. Everybody always wanted something. The world that I was coming from, in the life living on the streets, everybody always wants something. If they give it to you even freely, 2 days later, they come back and ask you for something, you got to do it. I sat there, I said, well, I wonder what this guy wants. And it took me about 3 minutes, said, whatever he wants, he can have it. I had done everything else in my life for a bag of dope. And I was willing to go forward and further in. With those thoughts, I went to sleep. I woke up the next morning. He woke me up. He said, we got breakfast, some cereal. I'm going to work. He was going to school, actually. He said, I got a newspaper here. Look for the job. I'll see you tonight. We're going to a meeting. He left me in his home. And no one ever has done that for me. Nobody. For the first time in my life, I was dope sick. And I was around things that was worth some money, and I didn't take anything. I sat there, cold turkey, jonesing like hell. I was hoping this time will go by so quick so he would come home so I wouldn't have to steal tonight. In the meantime, people of those meetings would call. Hey, are you the guy from last night? Yes, yes, yes. And Oh, are you okay? I thought they were just trying to help me out, but they weren't. They were just calling to see if I hadn't left with his shit yet. They were all uniting to save my life. They were also uniting to save his stuff. A couple of them showed up, knocked on the door, and opened the door. They came in. Oh, yeah, Chris is in school. I just stopped by to see how you're doing. Cool. And they would take me out after the meetings. They would feed me. For a long time, I hadn't felt like that. I hadn't. I didn't feel any prejudice against me. In fact, I felt the most welcome. And I hadn't felt like that for years. Years. You know, I'd been around the world. I shopped up in so many different countries, some of which I didn't even know the language. I'd been locked up in like 4 or 5 different countries. I'd been locked up here in every jurisdiction in tri-states and 3 penitentiaries and all other places. But no one has ever made me feel that way except these people. I stayed clean for 60 days. I thought I found the way to get clean now. I want to go celebrate and say goodbye to the love of my life one more time and come back and really get clean this time. I knew I couldn't drink alcohol. It was against the principle of this program. But I wanted to celebrate, goddammit. So I went and got a 6-pack of near beer. Didn't tell anybody anything about it. Because if I had told somebody, they would have told me, don't do this. And I went home and I drank. Well, I'd moved out of that guy's house and after about 30 days, and I was living in a group home and all, I drank the first near beer. Nothing happened. It wasn't much of a celebration. I was expecting something. The second one, I opened it up. I drank half of it. I don't know. I went outside and got a 6-pack of real beer. And came back, and I popped one of them. So I knew I messed up already. An hour later, I'm uptown looking for near heroin. It was nothing. No such thing. So I relapsed. Prior to this, my addiction had taken me to places that I never thought existed. It made me do things that I never thought I was capable of doing. After the relapse, things got worse tenfold. And it took me 3.5 years to come back. All I wanted was to go out there and say goodbye one more time. See, that's how a drug addict plans. I got $40. I want to go out there, get a bag of dope, shoot it all up, come back tomorrow. That's it. That's how we plan. I didn't plan that I'm going to spend this $40, go get a bag of dope, shoot it all up, go back out there, hustle $40, come back, get another bag of dope, and go out there, and this time go cash some bad checks, steal from my family, steal from a grocery store, get busted, go break the probation, go in there, get all my backup time, all that stuff. That's how drug addicts plan. We only see 2 inches when the road is about 5 miles. So this time around I came back, and I've been clean ever since. And it's been a little over 23 years. I'm a result of the unity that goes around in our program. It's not mine, and I can't take any credit for it. The only credit that I can give myself is that I show up day in and day out. And I follow, and I do things monkey see, monkey do. People have done these things before me. I just follow it. I'm grateful, and I'm lucky that I've had great teachers that taught me things that I do. Like, put my differences away when there's a newcomer at stake. The guy that I had an argument with over some whatever is a stupid thing or a really important thing, when the newcomer is between us, we're like brothers. Right. and there is no prejudice. I promised myself I wouldn't cry, because I always do when I speak in a convention. And normally I say the same story anyways. It always makes me cry when you get to this point. If it was anything about prejudgment or prejudice, or if there was any kind of requirement except the desire to stop using, I wouldn't have no place here, because I'm so different from all y'all. All. I look different. I'm shorter than some. I'm taller than some. My hair looks different than a lot of people. I think differently. I don't speak your language. I wasn't born here. I mean, I can come up with a 500 pages of reasons that I should not be here. And people in this program blocked it. Every time I came up with any excuse, they had an answer for it. My sponsor's name is John. My last sponsor's name is John. Every time I gave him an excuse, he says, with all the respect to people with the name John, he says, look at me. They named me after a toilet or a trick. Anything you got a bad. So what, you got a four-letter name. I love Narcotics Anonymous. And when the H&I subcommittee meets once a month, a bunch of people, whether they're two people or in some areas 50, 60, 100, or army of people, get together, organize, get literature, take meetings to the facilities, penitentiaries, jails, detoxes. We do everything. Some of us go in there and lie to these newcomers about what's going to happen if they get clean. Sky's the limit. You get clean, I'll show you a life you never thought existed. You just get clean. We do belly dance for some of them if you have to. Only if they get clean. We unite by any means necessary. If we can only get one addict clean, one. And every time we go to any of these facilities, if we can get one addict clean, the whole organization of H&I meeting that goes on for 6-7 months, doing all these meetings, doing all this organization, if we get one addict clean. Hi, Brian. It's all worth it. Unity versus prejudice. And we become the message, each and every one of us. We become the instrument of the hope that we're preaching. We become the instrument of faith that we're preaching. We become the message ourselves that we're practicing it. With the hopes that anywhere around the world, any addict, regardless of what we look like, what we smoke. I never smoke crack either. There are a couple of things. Let me clarify this. I think about drugs too, at times. Maybe every day sometimes. There are things that I haven't done. I haven't smoked crack, and I haven't drank Zima. They both came after I got clean. And every time I saw the commercials of this liquid drug, Zima, my heart would go out. I wonder how it tastes. When I heard people talking about smoking crack and everything else, geeking and all the other shit, I always wondered, wow, I wonder how it feels. I felt the same thing about Sharon Stone. I wonder how it feels. But the thing is, I'm staying clean. And I'm a dream of my entire family and myself coming through. And look, as I was saying in the last sentence, we all become the instrument of hope and the message that any addict anywhere in the world that asks for help can receive the help that we all have received and stop using drugs and live a clean life and live a good lifestyle like we always do, one day at a time. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.